welcome to the Yes to Life show on UK Health Radio. I'm Robin Daly, your host for the show and also founder of Yes to Life, the integrative cancer care charity that's helping people in the UK and beyond to learn about and access the many proven benefits of integrating lifestyle and complementary medicine into cancer care. The Yes to Life show is an ongoing showcase for a vast range of inspiring people who are pushing the boundaries of what's possible in cancer care in a multiplicity of ways, as well as moving the agenda for cancer care as a whole in the direction of person-centered, holistic care, an approach to cancer care that's built around love for our fellow humans at their time of need. My guest today is a bright star of inspiration in this arena, someone who has established and grown a highly meaningful service through years of determined and loving effort. Sophie Epstone, CEO of the Trek Stock Charity, providing exercise and well-being support to younger adults. Hi Sophie, so great to have you as my guest on the Yes to Life show.
Thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, I've been really looking forward to this opportunity to speak to you. You and I share quite a bit of common ground. In fact, so much that I'm shocked it's taken us so long to meet. Not least of the things we've got in common is the fact we both received an MBE simultaneously in the King's Honours List. I suspect it was as much of a kind of what moment for you as it was for me. But do you feel that that says something about a recognition for the particular kinds of efforts that you and I have been making in the arena of cancer care?
First of all, I can't believe we haven't met sooner. So this is great. Thank you. Congratulations on your honour.
And you. Yeah.
Yeah, it really was. It was a real shock and it was such a proud moment. And it was a reflection point, I think, thinking back to the whole journey of the charity, all the amazing people that have been alongside me along the way, our community. And I attended a reception at Buckingham Palace last year, hosted by the King. And it was for people working in cancer care. And there was just a moment that really stood out where, as he left, he turned around to a group of people in the room and just said, thank you so much for all you're doing. It really is making a difference. And I thought, there's people out there in small charities like ours who are working so hard to support people in all the ways they need it. And it was just such a proud moment to be recognised in that way. And it made me think, it was a lovely moment. And then it also made me think there's so much more to do.
Absolutely. We're only just getting started, aren't we? It made me think similar things. And, very noteworthy to me is the fact that, of course, King Charles, as he is now, was doing work in our arena 20 years before I started. As usual, he was well ahead of the herd in his thinking, and his interest in holistic health extends way back to when he was quite young. And I can't help thinking that him becoming king with that interest has had some influence on the fact that the sector that we work in is gaining some recognition in some form. And I'm very happy about it. Yeah, when I got my MBE, it just made me think, wow, well, this is an acknowledgement for the fact that we're doing something worthwhile here. You know, this isn't fluffy nonsense. This stuff really matters to people with cancer. And so for that reason, it was just a great thing to happen. It didn't matter whether it was me or anybody else, but it was just a great event to have happened. So very excited about it. Okay, so I realise I don't know nearly enough about Trek Stock, so this is a great opportunity. I can find out a lot more. So I wonder if you go back and just tell us about the beginnings of Trek Stock, the reason it came into being, and also, where did you get that great name from? What's that about?
Oh, the name. the charity was set up and founded in 2009. And without going through the whole history, the long story, I'll try and make it shorter. So I had a friend who was going through cancer treatment in their early 20s, and it was very clear that there was a gap in support that when people reach 25 or 1 year post-treatment around the kind of early 20s, they're ticked off the list and they're sent into adult care. And when I was watching my friend go through cancer, he was actually in a band with my brother and they were getting on with their lives. They were doing this exciting tour. They were doing all these gigs. And it was really clear that his life stopped in its tracks and there wasn't really any age-appropriate care. He was sent off into this kind of no man's land of adult care and all the amazing services finished. And, you know, Teenage Cancer Trust and Young Lives versus Cancer and other charities that support younger people, they've got such amazing, there's such amazing provision and people feel so supported. But when they reach that age, off they go and it's kind of, well done, you finish, you're off into adult care. And I really wanted to do something to help. I didn't know quite what at the time. It was raise awareness, I think. And I signed up to a trek to Everest, actually with Teenage Cancer Trust.
Right.
And fundraised with my dad, went up Everest and did a music gig to fundraise called Trek Stock.
There you go.
And did that, came back, and then people said, that was great, when's the next one? So did another one, did a series of smaller gigs with some amazing people who came and played at a small venue in North London. But alongside the fundraising, young people were getting in touch and saying, how can Trek Stock support me? And I thought, hang on a minute, I'm not actually sure. But what I am sure is I don't want to do anything that already exists because there's amazing charities out there. I don't want to duplicate right. anything. I'd either like to work in collaboration or in partnership, or is there something that we can do? And I got together a young person's panel of people in their 20s and 30s at the time. Chris from Copperfield was part of our young person's
yes.
panel. Great friend of mine.
Lovely.
And a few people who I'm in contact with now. And we all sat together and we did a bit of a needs analysis and said, what is missing? Like, what is it that you need that you're not getting when you're in this age group? And the themes there were kind of the same themes now. So it was around physical activity support, mental well-being support, fertility, nutrition, and then, of course, everything around that, around the holistic well-being. So getting your confidence and strength back and getting back into work and what support was there. So set the young person's panel up and then, kind of long story short, registered Trek Stock as a charity and worked with some partners in the very beginning, worked with Cancer Research UK in the beginning to fund a trial. But it became clear that there was a real gap and somebody needed to fill it. So started to move primarily into physical activity and mental well-being support. So nutrition advice. We started an exercise program, which I'll tell you more about hopefully at some point.
You definitely will.
It's grown and grown. But it was very much everybody's cancer experience, as you know, is very different. And people were coming and saying, I need this or I'd like support with this. And in the very beginning, I think it was quite a tailored approach. You know, let's do a nutrition workshop. Let's do an exercise program. And as we've grown, we've really seen where we can hone in and what programs have the most impact, what programs maybe people are already doing. So we won't continue doing those ones, but we'll work in partnership. And then also, as we've grown, we've worked with, for example, Teenage Cancer Trust and Macmillan and Young Lives and other charities to refer into our services when their services end. So we've tabled changing the name a few times because the name was really, I was doing a trek.
Yeah, I can see that. But it's a good name. I like it. But, I agree. It's not obvious why you got it, but it's memorable.
Yeah, it is a bit more that. So in the beginning, I was having a chat with my brother. I was doing a music gig. I was talking about a trek and he was talking about our dad going to Woodstock in this. Back in the day, and that's where it actually came from. But actually more recently, a few people have said that cancer feels like a trek and you are really well supported up the mountain. You've got your backpack of all your tools and your medical kit and your doctors and your CNS and everyone around you and your family and friends. But when you get to the summit, often people will say, well done, you've reached the summit, ring the bell, off you go. But as we all know, that the getting down the mountain is often the hardest part, and it's the kind of getting down and then carrying on is the hardest part often.
Right.
And that's where that support isn't there. So that's, it's kind of fed
it's
into
found,
our...
It's found a kind of symbolic nature. Yeah, it's very good. I like it. Anyway, so there we are. So as you've said, you're focusing in on what you might call younger adults, 20s, 30s, people who've fallen off the edge of the services for younger people. But it's for anyone with cancer, and it primarily helps people to get through the extremely challenging process of reintegration into the stream of life after treatment ends and all the rest of it. And you're using things like lifestyle medicine as a key form of support. So is that a fair kind of picture of what you're doing?
Yes. Yeah. And actually, last year, we expanded our age group into the 40s
right.
as well, because we found that the term young cancers being under 50, we had more people who were being diagnosed in their later 30s or were using our services, got to 40 and said, this is still relevant to me, but can I still stay supported by the charity? So we're fitting that 20s, 30s and 40s. And everything we do is movement based in the ways that people need it, and community runs through everything we do. So it's
right. I love it. Okay, so I want to talk a little bit about what's described very often as the cliff edge of the end of treatment. It's been spoken about for years. Far too little has been done about it generally, even though it's acknowledged quite widely. Just for people who maybe don't know what I'm talking about when I call it a cliff edge, do you want to explain why the end of treatment is commonly described that way?
I think in terms of the age group we support, I think people fall into the pediatric care or the young adult care or adult care. And so there's one cliff edge where people finish treatment and or they're in active treatment, but they go past that age 25 or 20, 21, you know, upwards 25, and they're transitioned into adult care, which looks and feels very different. It's not tailored. And they're not getting the right support they need.
Mm-hmm.
But equally, we've had some really interesting conversations with healthcare professionals recently where they've said to us, they've had patients who come to them who say, I think exercising might help me through my treatment, but I've been told to stop by my healthcare professionals.
Unbelievable.
And they're so frustrated. And so we talk to them and say, we can help. And they go, that is just fantastic, because we want to refer our patients, but we want to refer them to something that's evidence-based, that's safe, where we know that they'll be supported in the right ways. So I think it's the referral pathway that's really tricky, because we need teams to talk to each other. We need that awareness to be there around physical activity and the benefits of exercising through treatment in the ways, you know, in the ways that people are able to.
Yeah.
But the cliff edge in support is often, again, around the fact that people finish treatment and then they say, well, what next?
Right.
And it's not fair. I think they need and deserve a service. So they're not relying on themselves, you know, Googling things, trying to find support groups. There needs to be some really cohesive support available to people.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where hopefully, you know, our charity, your charity, other charities step in, because there's so many things that people need psychologically, physically, in all the ways that they need to build their strength and confidence and carry on post-treatment.
Mm. Well, you know, to sort of a casual observer, you know, the moment when somebody's given the all clear and told to go on and get on with their life should, you know, seems like a great thing. And you think that, right, now I can get back to my life. But there's not a realization that actually life will never be the same again for those people.
Yeah.
And actually it's not, it's, you know, okay, they might have a certain amount of relief that they've been given the all clear, but it's a terribly mixed situation for them because of having received lots of support, hopefully, through their treatment. And then, as you say,
none.
Well, not nothing much afterwards.
None.
It's like, whoa, wait a minute.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your healing journey could feel empowering, hopeful, even transformative? Welcome to the Alkaline Collective Mastermind, a community for anyone facing cancer, staying cancer-free, or committed to prevention. No matter your stage, whether you've chosen conventional care, an integrative path, or a fully holistic approach, here, you're not alone. Here, your healing journey becomes a journey of empowerment. We explore the science of oxygenation, metabolism, and alkalinity, while strengthening your emotional, spiritual, and physical well-being. This is a mastermind with heart, accountability, connection, wisdom, and real support. Because your journey isn't just about surviving, it's about thriving. Join us by clicking on the Alkaline Collective Mastermind banner on the UK Health Radio homepage or directly at alkaline-collective.com, where self-belief grows, healing deepens, and transformation begins.
Somewhere on Earth, there are 4 acres that belong to you. You don't need to be there in person, only there in purpose, protecting it, defending it, keeping it alive. Because the world doesn't need more good intentions. It needs more meaningful actions. Register your interest at 4acresearth.com.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Some people, the effects of cancer can be lifelong. For some people,
The
effects might happen 2 or 3 years down the road where they suddenly are faced with whether it's post-traumatic stress disorder or they're having trouble with after effects of treatment physically or mentally. And I think that's what we find in a lot of our events. People may not access our services at that point of discharging from treatment, but they'll come later on. Some will, but some will come later on and say, actually, now I need your support because I'm being affected by. So it's very much a tailored approach.
Right.
And people may have finished treatment, but they're waiting for follow-ups and checkups, and it's with them for a long time afterwards.
Definitely. So you're there to catch them 3 years later when they realize that actually they haven't really got it back together again at all. Yeah, well, that's brilliant. That's so great. I mean, absolutely needed and a genuine response to this terrible cliff edge situation. So very, very good to hear. Okay, I was also put in mind with hearing you talk about these younger adults, just what an immensely crushing thing to happen, a cancer diagnosis, at the point when you're really getting stuck into life. You might have just, got married or just had kids or just starting your career, or you know what I mean? Emotionally, you're at the beginning of everything. And then suddenly there's this roadblock which says, maybe not. And it's an immense thing for people, I think.
It's huge. It's huge. And we hear so many different experiences of people where, I mean, there's one person I always remember, Jess, who was one of our ambassadors, and really amazingly, we saw her recently, and she said, oh, I'm this many years post-treatment, and I came to one of the first events. But I remember her saying that she'd come to London, she was training in law, and she got her new job, and she was really excited, and then she had a pain in her calf, and she was running, and she thought it was this and that, and basically she was in hospital for a really long time. And she was just saying that the thing for her was that the mental block where, all the other people training carried on. It's that everything stopping in your tracks and everything carries on around you. And then you come out of the other side and life looks very different and your outlook looks very different. And it's whether do you want to carry on with that, that plan, or do you want to have a different plan? But it's huge for people, and it stops them at all different parts of that. As you say, it's that kind of pivotal life stage where things are just getting going.
Yeah.
And I think you've had all the support in your teens maybe, and as a younger adult, you kind of, now it's your time to be maybe more self-sufficient and on your own for many people.
Right.
And you might not have those support networks around you, and then life stops.
It's true. You left your family behind or whatever. Yes, you might be in a different country. Yes, it's shocking, really. And tragically, of course, the figures for diagnosis at the age that you support are just going up and up, aren't they?
It is, and it's 99 people a day in the 20s, 30s and 40s. It's over 36,000 a year. And the thing that always shocks us so much is that people come into our events and sometimes they look on their faces and they say, oh my gosh, I've never met anybody else with cancer my own age.
Right.
Because I've been treated, because being a postcode lottery, perhaps, they're not near a major treatment center. They don't, you know, they are sitting in waiting rooms where that people assume that they're the carer for maybe their parents who they're with.
Right.
And they meet people and the difference it makes is
huge.
It's so huge. And you think there's got to be something we can do somehow.
Yeah, we find exactly the same thing, that the community aspect you mentioned earlier is critical. This actually finding your tribe, so to speak, people who understand your situation, people who understand your interests, you know, looking outside the box for lifestyle medicine approaches, for example, is not everybody's thing. Yeah. And therefore, you can feel like a complete loony doing things like this when actually it's good science-based stuff and it makes complete sense. But if you don't have the right tribe around you, you're out there on your own with this stuff and you just have it going around in your own head. So, yeah, people come to our conference and they're like, whoa, look at this. Loads of people who think like I do. Mm-hmm. Really important for them. Yeah. Okay. We should speak about exercise now. Front and center of Trekstock seems to be. During the life of both our organizations, exercise apparently sort of came out of nowhere as a kind of a thing, you know, in cancer. I now understand, having talked to lots of people, it's actually got a long tail, like most things, back into the last century leading up to that. But it's just sprung into being, you know, in some countries, it's kind of a leading element, a key element of cancer treatment. Tragically, the UK, as you pointed out, we can still find people advising people not to do it, let alone encouraging them to do it. So that is tragic, but it's fantastic to see that for Trekstock it's front and centre and you're pushing like mad for it. Do you want to give us the story of that and how that aspect in particular came to being so important to Trekstock?
I mean, as you say, in some countries it's effectively prescribed as something that you should be doing.
And it should be. It should be. Yeah. It's really good.
Yeah, it's very good. I think for us, movement is not just about fitness, kind of the term fitness. It's about helping people feel stronger, reconnect with their bodies. Their body's changing, have more energy through treatment. And it was something whereby we knew it was important. We knew the growing evidence base around it. And we started delivering a program with cancer rehab instructors where people would have one-to-one sessions. And then we started running group sessions. And we found that the group sessions work because of the community element as well.
Absolutely. That's the trick, Two hits at once.
Exercise with people who get it too. You can bring along a buddy. And over the last couple of years, we realized that there was a barrier to entry to our program. And that was because our program needed a healthcare professional referral. And for some people, chasing the referral, trying to find the right person to do it on a busy ward when you're thinking about the competing priorities of healthcare professionals. And so what we've been doing is working with oncology physios and designing a triage service, which we're going to be launching later this year, which we're really excited about, because what that will mean is people can self-refer into our program. They'll have a free one-to-one with an oncology physio. And then depending on their cancer treatment and what plan they need, they'll go off on different pathways. So they may be able to use our on-demand content and some of our pre-recorded, but they'll also have group sessions, one-to-one, they'll have the cancer rehab sessions. So it's very much a tailored approach. We're hoping that it's also something where healthcare professionals will feel really confident referring into, because they know the impact of the program, they know it's evidence-based, it's led by professionals and experts. And hopefully it's that, you know, it's that outlet for them to say, off you go to something now that's going to support you. Because so many people have said to us, I was offered chair yoga, I was offered some gentle stretching. It was a great thing, but it wasn't really with people my age. It wasn't really tailored to me.
Right.
And then also, I think people have a lot of the time has said, you know, I've gone down to the local gym, but when they say, has anyone got anything they need to let us know about, they don't necessarily want to put their hands up at the back of the class and say,
no,
I've just been through treatment and this is the impact on my body, because the expertise may not be there, or it may be a confidence thing, or it's they want to get the strength and confidence back. So we're so excited about this triage service, because we'll be able to support a lot more people all over the UK in this tailored way. But I mean, more and more, we just know the evidence base around exercise and how,
I mean, how it's astonishing, isn't it? Astonishing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's great. It sounds brilliant. The fact you've got so much on offer there in different forms for different people, and you've got this like triaging service to direct people to the best thing for them. Absolutely excellent. And you're obviously doing your best to wheel your way into our established system, to the NHS, which that's where we need change, obviously. Mm. I mean, what do you think it's going to take to get to the stage where our oncologists even spend 15 seconds saying, I think it would be a great idea if you went on an exercise program? That would be massive here. But how can this happen, do you think?
How are we going to do it?
Yeah.
I think we've got the National Cancer Plan talking about living well through and beyond cancer. And
there's
the
some good stuff in there, yes. Yeah.
And it's all great, but now it's how do we deliver it and who can we deliver it with? We are going to be working with Macmillan, which is fantastic, to try and strengthen that referral pathway. But it's a huge challenge to be able to, you know, we can't go around. I think in the beginning we did go around, not every healthcare professional, but we tried to go around lots of healthcare professionals. And we told them about our services and they said, wow, this is amazing. But then they didn't necessarily tell their other teams, and it wasn't really a joined up approach. So we're looking at how to grow the team and look at that referral pathway in a more structured way, how to get our food and cancer guide into more NHS hospitals, how to get them referring. But in terms of how, it's difficult as a small charity when you haven't got enormous marketing budgets or huge people on the ground. I think for us, it's also about collaboration, though. Because if we can collaborate with other charities and signpost to different services, that's one way that we can do it. And I think just showing the impact, because for healthcare professionals, knowing that their patients can go to something safe and evidence-based, that's really going to help their outcomes.
Yeah,
sure. Yeah. For some people, it's just to help them go through treatment. For some people, they were a marathon runner before cancer and they want to get back to things like that. But Yeah,
hugely important. Yeah, well, it's interesting what you just said about resources, because we've both got small charities.
Yeah,
and it's hugely frustrating, isn't it? Obviously, not being able to do things at scale like that in order to make create a big impact. But I also feel that there's something in particular about being a kind of gnat flying around, prodding here and there, irritating me. Yeah. A small charity has this kind of flexibility, forward vision, can respond to situations quicker. I'm very aware of the fact that we play an important part in bringing new thinking, novelty, moving things on. That a larger charity, they can't do that, funnily enough. And horses for courses.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think we've all been asked to be part of certain conversations over the last maybe 2 or 3 years, because larger charities and things like the All-Party Parliamentary Group and other groups recognise that there are really amazing smaller charities delivering services with huge impact to small groups of people, and the knowledge base and the data we have and the knowledge we have and the impact we have is really, really huge. So, but how do we do more of that? And how do we make sure that nobody faces cancer alone? So I think there's a huge opportunity if we have the right strategic partners on board.
Yeah, no, I completely agree. And it's very good that it's being recognised that this expertise, knowledge, experience does exist. Okay, it's in small pockets, but for a plan like the 10-year cancer plan, where are they going to find out how to do this stuff if not asking people like you and me?
Yeah, we'll volunteer.
We actually got the experience. Yeah, we'll volunteer. Yeah. Absolutely.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
What if your worst dreams aren't your enemy?
Falling, cheating, being chased, naked, drowning, losing teeth. What if I fail? What if something goes wrong?
I'm Teresa Chung, dream expert, best-selling author, and co-host of The Healing Power of Your Dreams. And in my latest title, Extreme Dreaming, I reveal a powerful truth. There are no bad dreams.
They feel so real, but that's so you remember them.
They're messages, signals, transformative gifts guiding you toward clarity.
Click on the Extreme Dreaming discount banner link on UK Health Radio homepage and learn to decode even your darkest dreams.
Extreme Dreaming.
Are you ready to listen?
The station that makes you feel good.
That was exercise. You've also talked about the fact you're bringing in nutritional advice into your work. Do you want to say a bit about why and the ways in which you're doing that?
Yeah, because it's something that we both do. So that's...
Exactly.
Yeah. I think in terms of food and cancer, it was just part and parcel of talking about exercise and talking about mental well-being and that holistic care, because, you know, you might be exercising, but you might want to be eating better, or you might be confused about the diet and nutrition advice or lack of advice or confusing advice that you may have on treatment. And for a lot of people, they were saying to us, we just don't know what advice to take. We don't know, maybe we get lots of other people's thoughts and ideas about what we might need to have on treatment. And so we wrote a food and cancer guide. I think it was, my timeline is now a little hazy from COVID, but maybe it was 5 years ago. We wrote a nutrition guide with some nutritionists and oncologists and some of our community, which went down really well. We sent off around the country to NHS hospitals, and we had CNS and healthcare professionals calling us up saying, this is great, how can we get some more copies? And realise we couldn't afford to print some more copies. We need to have a partner to do it with.
Yeah.
But also we realised through some feedback that we needed to make it more accessible, more diverse. We needed to think about the financial impact of cancer on food and cooking and lifestyle. So we've just done a new version, which we launched a couple of months ago.
Fantastic.
We're turning it into it was actually around 90 pages when we went to print and realized, again, that's not feasible to be sending around the country to hospitals. So we're working with a doctor to trim that down, to make it a downloadable version, to have a kind of shorter booklet version for hospitals. And then also think about how we can pull out some of that content, because it's all evidence-based. And it was mainly around, I mean, similar to Yes to Life, but around busting those myths and giving people really easy to digest information.
Yes.
That will help them kind of cut through all of some of the nonsense that's out there,
yeah,
or some of the unhelpful advice that's given. So that's really why we did it.
Yeah, very much needed. Yeah, people need an entry point, actually. You're right. You can easily write a huge book about any of these things, can't you? Yeah. And that's not necessarily what people need when they just saying, help, what do I do? Mm-hmm. They need something which allows them to get started, and then they learn after that. Then they find what they want in the way of resources. Yeah, we've got a similar kind of thing for integrative medicine, basically, which is called Finding Your Way. It's a slim little booklet, and it's extracted from our longer book, you know, and everything, but very much as a sort of entry point for people just to get the thinking that there is stuff they can do to help themselves.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Yeah. There was, I think also in hospitals, people are sometimes told just get the calories in,
yeah,
but they're not necessarily sure out of what can I do,
yeah,
cheap or that's quick or that's easy or friends and family could make for me. And we worked with Toral Shah on our book.
Oh, yeah.
We went to Toral's and she made all this incredible food, but she made some soups for us that were so quick and easy but really nutritious. And it's really difficult when you're in hospital and you've got a certain, you know, certain menu to choose from, but it's thinking outside of that, what can I also have? What could friends and family bring me? Or what could I have when I'm at home that's not a whole big list of ingredients? And actually, we had, we were working with Dr. Joshua Woolrich, who was on the panel for our event. And we were looking at the pantry list together on a call the other day. And we were looking at it and we thought, do we really want to give people this pantry list of all this stuff that they feel, yeah, they have to have in their cupboard? Let's just not bother and say, these are the ingredients and these are some great things to have. But it's about not putting more pressure on people when they're already going through something so huge.
Absolutely right. Really, absolutely right. Mm. Make it easy.
Yeah.
Yeah, very much so. Yeah, Toral's a great resource for that kind of thing, of course. Yeah. Brilliant. Yeah, really good. And you say, you know, like the kind of advice people are given, you know, isn't necessarily helpful at all, you know, like they put the calories on or whatever it is. That's just not good enough. And it's also the other piece of advice they all get, which is just not good enough, is, oh, eat a good, healthy, balanced diet. Well, what's that?
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
You know, nobody says what it is. And yeah, so, you know, that's not helpful. But anyway, yeah, great. Sounds marvelous what you're doing there. Okay, so yeah, I think it's fair to say that both our organizations are based on a foundation that there's an appreciation of the power and need for holistic support,
yeah,
that goes way beyond addressing just the physical symptoms of cancer. And I'd love to hear what you have to say about your appreciation of the needs of people in the realms of the mind, the emotions, spiritually, mm-hmm, when they're faced with a diagnosis of cancer.
Yeah. It is. It always has been about the whole person. And mm-hmm, like I was saying with the food and cancer, it's part and parcel of the whole thing. We can't really talk about exercise without talking about nutrition, without, right, talking about rest and recovery. And we're looking at rehab and recovery. But that also, you know, with that, you think about sleep and restorative things that people can do. And we've run our community meetups for a while, and we've started to do movement-based ones. And there's some brilliant charities, for example, like Shine Cancer Support, who run meetups similar to Trekstock, where people go and connect. And we've started to run sound baths, for example, and yoga. Right. And the sound baths have been really, really popular.
People love them.
They really love them, because it's that, yes, moment to just really pause. And it's really healing and restorative, and it's helping people mentally and physically. So it's very gentle, but yes, it's about the whole person and helping them, I think, be as strong as they can be through their treatment, alongside their treatment. So what can we help them do? And now it's making me think we must talk about how we can collaborate. And
I'm going to talk about that,
yeah,
next. Yeah, definitely, we must. But I just wanted, before we do that, I just wanted to say a little bit about you. I'm sure you must have something to say about the relationship between all those things you've just said that you seek to address, because they're naturally part of the whole person that's in front of you, and hope.
Yeah.
How those two things are connected.
Yeah. I think if isolation is sometimes at the center, because as you said before, people are diagnosed and immediately they're stopped in their tracks and they're isolated to a certain degree, and they are they're certainly cut off, and then they're in this kind of new normal of treatment and a new experience, and they've got 101 things to think about. It's how can, I think, the two organizations, how can we give them that hope and that strength and that confidence? How can we make them feel supported? I think we've really thought quite recently about the fact that people need and deserve better cancer care in this age group. It's not good enough to say, sorry, it doesn't exist. And, you know, it's up to you to refer yourself or to find that support. Yeah.
Here's a leaflet.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. It's not good enough. You're right.
No, and we're not replacing any medical treatment. We're trying to complement everything that people are doing on their treatment pathway. But how can we plug in and really support them and give them that? It's that looking forward. One of the things that we've just launched is a sanctuary room at UCH Hospital in London.
Nice.
And
nice.
The reason it answers the question in terms of, we went to UCH a few years ago and it was Christmas and we'd been to the Teenage Cancer Trust ward and it was amazing and lots of things were going on and it felt really supportive and buzzy and the fantastic team there. We went up to the adult ward and we said, where do people go? Where do people receive their treatment news? Where could they bring a friend or family member? And there was nothing. There was a little room that was, it had been left. And we said, we're not taking on a big room in every hospital project, but we felt really strongly that we needed to make a little sanctuary for people so they felt more than their treatment. So we've done this room. Where you can go in, you can dim the lights, you can read information on food and cancer, you could read a book, you can have friends and family there, you can go and sit and receive news or just take a minute for yourself. But the idea is that whether it's a physical space or a virtual space, it's a little sanctuary where you can kind of step away from what you're going through, either meet others who get it as well, or just have a moment to yourself, like with the sound bath, it's a moment to yourself. And that's where, you know, I'm sure as well through Yes to Life, through feedback, when people say that gave me hope or that gave me confidence or that gave me, you know, that changed my outlook. That's so powerful. And that's why we do it. That's why we know that it makes a difference.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I'm thinking of like our helpline, you know, quite often people's first call to our helpline is like, oh my God, at last, somebody who actually doesn't think I'm a nutcase and is, you know, being supportive of what I like to do for my own well-being.
Yeah.
It can be an absolute, you know, groundbreaking moment for people. And particularly around hope, funny enough, because I was just talking about hope, because of the fact that if someone gets a serious diagnosis, quite often the hope is evaporates quickly from everybody around them, regardless of where they are, you know, and people start grieving for people while they're still alive, you know, their family and friends. It's a terrible thing to be in a way, a sort of dying person when you actually, wait a minute, I'm alive.
Yeah.
And it's that thing where people need to be supported in having reasonable hope, whatever their situation is, because we've seen the most extraordinary things happen time and time again, which shouldn't have happened in medical terms, but they have.
Yeah.
And why? Well, they've happened to somebody who's hopeful and just literally goes through it despite the odds.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think it's such an important thing to support hope in people. And
that's so important. I had an email from someone the other day that said, as you know, I was told my outlook would be this 15 years later. Look at, you know,
here I am.
Me now. And it is having that hope, because often people will say, you know, you get the diagnosis and all that support is there, but then suddenly people might say, I'm not sure what to say to them. Should I still get in touch with them? And actually, I think there's one person that I just thought is such an inspiration. Emma, who was our head of fundraising at Trekstock, she left just before COVID and she went to another charity and she called me a few weeks ago and she told me that she's got cancer and she has just gone, yep, I have it, but this is what I'm doing. And it obviously it's different for everybody, but she's been such an inspiration and she's done everything she possibly could. She's carried on and she's doing really, really well. And I just said to her, amazing.
Well, she's got the past experience of all the people that you've helped at Trekstock to know that it's worth doing that's actually the way to go. So that's why it's so important, the community aspect, sharing around the hope gets shared around. So we've got a couple of minutes left. Collaboration. Look, if we don't do some collaboration going forward from here, I'll be very cross.
We must. We absolutely must. Yeah, we have to.
Yeah, I just feel we talked about so many things today where we think exactly alike. And obviously we're not doing the same thing. So there's the collaboration. We can actually refer people across for the things that we individually offer as organisations. And thereby offer much more to people, which
definitely
I'm very excited about. And
That would be great. And I think we both, in terms of what people want to do alongside their treatment, or it's kind of no taboo is too taboo, and every conversation is valid and every suggestion and idea is valid, and bring whatever you need when you're going through it to us, and we will either say we can help you, or for example one of our partners can help you, or here are some people that you can connect with. So it's very much, it's that community piece that's really important.
Yeah.
And I'm sure we can do something there.
All right. It's a resolution.
Yeah.
All right. Well, look, there we go. We're out of time. Thanks so much, Sophia. I've absolutely loved chatting today, and I look forward really very much to continuing the discussion.
Thank you so much for having me. And yeah, looking forward to collaborating more together. All right. We'll see you soon.
Bye-bye.
Thanks, bye-bye.
What an inspiration Sophie is. Please do check out the Trekstock website at trekstock.com and read about all the resources and services on offer by the charity. If you haven't already looked at the Yes to Life 2026 conferences, then I advise you do. They both go under the banner Reclaiming Our True Nature, and we've already delivered the online events. But recordings of the hugely inspiring talks are available from the Yes to Life web store, which you can access via the online store link that's right at the top of the Yes to Life website, yestolife.org.uk. Look under Insights and Expert Talks when you get there. The subject matter of the online conference was hugely appreciated by our audience. They loved it. And it will again be the focus for our in-person event on the 26th of September in central London. Presented by luminaries such as Dr. David Hamilton, Dr. Leo Prunboom, Dr. Naysha Winters, James Maskell and more. To see the whole programme and reserve a place, go to conference.yestolife.org.uk. Thanks so much for listening. Please make a note to listen again if you can next week, when I'll be back with another Yes to Life show here on UK Health Radio. Goodbye.